I'm so bad. Okay, so I'm only a minute and 30 seconds into your message, and I'm already needing to respond. You talked about Hillman and dreams, which got me thinking about an earlier message you sent where you wanted to experiment with lucid dreaming. And I never responded to that at the time, so I need to respond to that now.
32. Symphony of a Restless Night. Everything was sleeping as if the universe were a mistake. The wind, blowing uncertainly, was a formless flag unfurled over a non-existent army post. High, strong gusts ripped through nothing at all, and the window frames shook their panes to make the edges rattle.
I'll see you.
Underlying everything, the hushed night was the tomb of God, and my soul felt sorry for God.
Still, I feel the thrill of your charms, lips that once were mine, tender eyes that shine.
Hey, FP. I thought I'd send you another letter whilst we're focusing on topics of sleep and sleeplessness, as well as the homeostatic regulations of our life-driven pleasure principles and the entropy-geared hungers of our death drives. I also wanted to bring into our correspondence some voicings from Rob on the topic of lucid dreaming. I've always felt Rob to be a kind of sleeping partner in this podcast, as many of my messages to you are quite similar to the kinds of exchanges I have with Rob, and sometimes I'm really just talking to Rob through you, so it all melds together in some shape or form, I guess. You opened your last missive to me with the words, "Everything was sleeping as if the universe were a mistake," which kind of made me laugh. Georges Lemaître, the Belgian priest and cosmologist knocking around in the 1920s, his mind focused on the universe both through the lens of his faith as well as through the tools of scientific inquiry, didn't seem to think that our universe was a mistake. But at the same time, he also provided future scientists with the idea of the primeval atom and the Big Bang, which may well have been, if not an outright error, at least a kind of, I don't know, cosmic hiccup. Lemaître's cosmogony also echoes those initial lines of Genesis, which suggest another kind of singularity, God in this case, erupting like a somewhat benevolent genie from a cosmic lamp, his primordial nothingness exploding into the everythingness of, well, everything. It's Lemaître's concepts which also gave us 20th century atheists a little bit more ammunition to argue for a universe completely lacking in divine intervention, as if all the scale, vastness and complexity of the world in which we live, as well as the utter randomness of various other physical laws stretching across the cosmos, might suggest random chance rather than any kind of grand design or designer running the show. This no doubt has existential ramifications, whether we like it or not, for our own sorry lives.
Suddenly, a new order of universal things acted on the city. The wind whistled in its lulls, and there was a slumbering awareness of countless agitations on high. Then the night closed like a trapdoor, and a vast calm made me wish I'd been sleeping.
I feel a bit bad about bad-mouthing Adam Sims in my last missive to you. As I listened again and again to Sims reading the fragment before this, I came to appreciate, as I'm sure you did, the theatricality of his voicings. All very Hamlet, all very brooding, self-absorbed and portentously overblown Enneagram 4 kind of stuff. which is what we are we not? You know, you and me, high-minded, intensely self-serious ghouls, metaphysical drama queens, we might also add, occasionally saved for posterity by the odd turn of an odd phrase or the glint of an interesting idea. But often, are we not just floundering in a kind of purple prose? We are the adults who have never grown out of their teenage years, or teenagers who comport themselves like world-weary adults, wallowing in Weltschmerz before they've even acquired a driver's license for the uncharted roads they've yet to travel along. What I want to really focus on here, though, and share with you, are Rob's instructions for how to cultivate states of lucid dreaming. In fragment 33, which follows on from this one, the act of writing itself seems to allow you to experience life more from the vantage point of a waking dream than from your routine and mundane existence. This is also why we intoxicate ourselves, is it not? Anything other than having to feel, although we are well aware of feeling this too, the painful, sterile rage and utter uselessness of dreaming, as you put it, in a letter that you wrote in 1914 to João de Lebre Lima, where you first mention your idea for the Book of Disquiet, explaining the title was chosen to reflect, quote, restlessness and uncertainty, which are its dominant notes. You also mentioned to Zhao a piece that you'd published in a literary journal in 1913 called The Forest of Estrangement, which you tell him is the only published text in which you make, quote, tedium and the sterile dream that wearies of itself even before it starts dreaming, a motif and the central theme. Going on to say that your estranged style is something you feel to be, quote, quite your own. Again, that romantic individualist four, right? Unaware, as you possibly may have been, of other estranged romantic individualists writing at the time, like Kafka and Bruno Schulz, Robert Walser and Daniel Kalms. Our life was all of life, you say, in that fever dream of yearning and past-focused, wounded rejection that is the Forest of Estrangement. Our love was love's perfume. We lived impossible hours, full of being ourselves, and all because we knew, with every scrap of our flesh, that we were not a reality.
Stars shining bright above you, night breezes seem to whisper, I love you.
There's a moment in Rob's message where I think he gives us a hint as to what it might be like to be consciously awake in the midst of that somewhat psychotic experience we refer to as rapid eye movement sleep.
Birds singing in the sycamore tree, dream a little dream of me.
Rob's glimpse into lucid dreaming also gave me a sense of what so-called enlightened human creatures, maybe even Rob himself, are able to experience without any chemical crutches to get them there. This ability to perceive beauty, meaning, and connection in those things around us, including our own often upset or troubled inner perceptions and jumbled thoughts, a prelapsarian state, a kind of Enneagram 9 state of flow, numinosity, wholeness, acceptance, and, well, possibility.
Say nighty night and kiss me, just hold me tight and tell me you'll miss me. While I'm alone, as blue as can be, dream a little dream of me.
Or as you lay it out in fragment 33, a combination of that holy triumvirate of sleep, home, and freedom. When these elements intertwine, be they within the vivid landscapes of your writing or the realms of lucid dreaming, intoxicated possibilities present themselves to us, but without the need, for Rob at least, of toxic intoxication. This transcends the mundane reality we navigate in our waking states, a reality that often feels half empty or even utterly depleted, into something worth living for. I'm always struck by the mythos presented in the first few pages of Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now, which goes something like this.
One night, not long after my 29th birthday, I woke up in the early hours with a feeling of absolute dread. I had woken up with such a feeling many times before, but this time it was more intense than it had ever been. The silence of the night, the vague outlines of the furniture in the dark room, the distant noise of a passing train, everything felt so alien, so hostile, and so utterly meaningless that it created in me a deep loathing of the world. The most loathsome thing of all, however, was my own existence. What was the point in continuing to live with this burden of misery? Why carry on with this continuous struggle? I could feel that a deep longing for annihilation, for non-existence, was now becoming much stronger than the instinctive desire to continue to live. I cannot live with myself any longer. This was a thought that kept repeating itself in my mind. Then suddenly I became aware of what a peculiar thought it was. Am I one or two? If I cannot live with myself, there must be two of me, the I and the self that I cannot live with. Maybe, I thought, only one of them is real. I was so stunned by this strange realization that my mind stopped. I was fully conscious, but there were no more thoughts. Then I felt drawn into what seemed like a vortex of energy. It was a slow movement at first and then accelerated. I was gripped by an intense fear and my body started to shake. I heard the words, "Resist nothing," as if spoken inside my chest. I could feel myself being sucked into a void. It felt as if the void was inside myself rather than outside. Suddenly, there was no more fear, and I let myself fall into that void. I have no recollection of what happened after that.
Something, however, had changed. We might say that Tolle's anhedonic waking life had become a kind of waking dream, a lucid dream, full of potential and wonder.
I was awakened by the chirping of a bird outside the window. I had never heard such a sound before. My eyes were still closed and I saw the image of a precious diamond. Yes, if a diamond could make a sound, this is what it would be like. I opened my eyes. The first light of dawn was filtering through the curtains. Without any thought, I felt, I knew, that there's infinitely more to light than we realize. That soft luminosity filtering through the curtains was love itself. Tears came into my eyes. I got up and walked around the room. I recognized the room, and yet I knew that I had never truly seen it before. Everything was fresh and pristine, as if it had just come into existence. I picked up things, a pencil, an empty bottle, marveling at the beauty and aliveness of it all. That day I walked around the city in utter amazement at the miracle of life on earth, as if I had just been born into this world. For the next 5 months, I lived in a state of uninterrupted deep peace and bliss. I was left with nothing on the physical plane. I had no relationships, no job, no home, no socially defined identity. I spent almost 2 years sitting on park benches in a state of the most intense joy. Later, people would occasionally come up to me and say, "I want what you have. Can you give it to me or show me how to get it?" And I would say, "You have it already. You just can't feel it because your mind is making too much noise." Before I knew it, I had an external identity again. I had become a spiritual teacher.
Claire Johnson, whose book on lucid dreaming I've started reading, describes the importance of developing a lucid waking mindset, very akin to Tolle and Nisargadatta's power of now, I am that state, concentrating on every moment of our mundane lives as if entranced by all of it, awed by consciousness itself. We do this, Johnson and others suggest, by casting an eye, an ear, as well as our embodied being into the everyday, as though we were dreaming it. She describes this as a reality check, which is something I've been trying to do today myself, becoming as present as I can be in each moment, focusing on the various sights, sounds, and sensations around and within me, whilst at the same time asking myself the question, am I dreaming? Is this real? One result of this, I'm finding to be somewhat true, is that the mind, even for just a moment, becomes so entranced by the colours, shapes, and textures of, say, one's navy blue cardigan sleeve, or an ant on the floor, or the patterns of water pooling in the lid of a pan whilst washing it, or the tiny mouth and nose movements Max makes whilst sleeping beside me, that we are briefly jolted, if you like, into a quasi-dreamlike state, a lucid dreamlike state, a feeling of acute but not unpleasant presence and merging with whatever sensory data of existence we're guiding ourselves to focus on. This also provides a sort of vivid Blu-ray HD version of our immediate perceptions, which might paradoxically also serve as a slightly hallucinatory break from them.
Be alert. Notice beauty and strangeness. View life as a waking dream and ask yourself regularly, am I dreaming right now? Expect to become lucid in a dream. We all dream every night, and we are all conscious during the day. To lucid dream, we simply need to combine these two natural abilities. Dream lucidity is a natural and learnable ability. Train your mind to expect that you will become lucid in your dreams. Have faith that it will happen.
I do have a little bit of faith, particularly after hearing about Rob's lucid dreaming adventures, which I'm going to play for you now. Another motivation for lucid dreaming is the possibility, I think, of us meeting one day in a dream, you, me, and maybe even Rob, and perhaps going for a walk together through the streets of Lisbon, visiting some of your favourite cafes along the way. I think tonight, or maybe when I'm next stoned, I might even watch Wim Wenders' film Lisbon Story again and start building up some images of that city, a city I've never visited, where one day, perhaps, the three of us might meet and explore, whether in dream or in so-called reality.
So, yes, you didn't ask this, but I'm answering your unasked question. Yes, you can learn from a book. That's exactly what I did. I found a book, read that, and followed the instructions, and eventually it worked. I don't know how long it took. It was a long time, though. Maybe 6 months, maybe even a year. Heck, maybe it was 3 months. I don't know. Time's different when you're younger, but I know that it took me a very long time. What you could try is the two methods that I used. One is counting down or counting up as you're going to sleep. You know, just one, two, just counting. And the reasoning behind that, the logic behind that, is that it keeps part of your mind awake as you're drifting off to sleep. The other method that, and I think this is the method that eventually worked for me, I'm not too sure, is that as I was falling asleep, I would just repeat to myself, this is just a dream, or maybe it was, you know, I'm currently dreaming, or something like that, with the hope that it would carry through into the dream world, and that, you know, something in my mind would realize, oh, this is a dream. And that method worked for me eventually. Like I said, it was a long time though. But the big thing about it that was trippy, though, is that once you do it and you're really awake in your dream, and then you realize just how real it is, it really makes you start questioning reality. And that was the trippy and yet fun part of it. Enjoyed that. Anyway, I just wanted to give you those two tips on how I accomplished it, at least. But if you ever want to get a book on it, do that too.
So there you go. If that doesn't encourage you to practice lucid dreaming, FP, I think nothing will. I find it quite inspiring, and also, I don't know, I guess something to work on during the week when I am missing my green girlfriend who I've decided, bar the odd impromptu visit, is mainly going to be consigned to arriving in my life like a sort of deus ex machina on the weekend to show me visions of why it might still make sense to push myself through this kind of groundhog day daily grind, if only to have a few precious hours of lucid dreaming with her. I realized this, I think, after listening to Rob's message, and that is, lucid dreaming is really also what my experience of being stoned is like. Being stoned is lucid dreaming. I'm awake, supremely awake, conscious of my thoughts and sensations, but at the same time, all the usual humdrum sight, sound, smells, and weary ideations are suddenly alive and meaningful in ways that they weren't before. Just as when Natalia, that other green girlfriend, would accompany Max and myself on walks, all three of us experiencing the world through a single heart, mind, soul, albeit in three separate skeletal frames. Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden is often how I felt at her side. And when she vanished, well, somehow or other she took Eden with her. Your description of the Forest of Estrangement is, I think, a perfect encapsulation of that, FP. I know how melodramatic and soppy my descriptions of rambles with Natalia might sound. And indeed, let's be fair, your Forest of Estrangement hasn't weathered particularly well either. But that's genuinely how we experienced it. At least in recollection, right? And that's also how it feels, or has felt for the last few years, exiled from Eden with no way back, other than through occasional mind-altering but not especially healthy substances. Which is also why I think I can't seem to give them up, even if I have to spend a week of blah and so whatness between our times together, thinking only about when me and Gigi will finally be reunited again in a few days' time, able to go on our country walks with Max at our side. And of course, that's kind of how things went with Natalia too, as she largely liked to be left alone on weekdays to get on with her Enneagram 9 self-prescribed routines and procedural comforts, showing up only on weekends to be showered with care and affection, and also, I guess, to shower some of that back to us. All gone. More than gone. Because what we have left is this never-ending, haunting absence. I had initially thought that I might want a lucid dream in order to meet Natalia again. After she vanished, I did dream, which is to say, fantasized on an almost daily basis about being able to see her, to walk with her and Max on some of our favorite Chiltern walks once more, to feel alive in the way that I once felt alive by her side, happy and grateful and ever so joyfully involved in the ever-changing beauty of the natural world around us. That year in which she graced us with her presence pretty much every weekend, I thought I might have finally found that secret chord which Leonard Cohen and, you know, presumably the team behind the Bible, believe that David played, and it pleased the Lord. For a year we played that secret chord again and again and again, every weekend in fact, and I thought that I might really be able to do so, to continue playing that chord for the one I was devoted to, until Max and Natalia and I were all tucked up in our graves, wishing each other sweet dreams and ta-ta for now toodles, kind of like the Waltons at the end of that TV show from my childhood and probably Rob's too.
Night, everybody.
Good night, Mama. Night, Ben.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, Mama.
Good night, Daddy.
Good night, children.
Good night, Daddy. Good night, Elizabeth.
Good night, John Boy. Good night, Jim Bob. Good night, Jim Bob.
Good night, Jim Bob.
A peaceful and grateful sigh at the end of a day well passed, a life well lived. A life, we might say, lived in the consummation, culmination, and grace of a lucid dream, rather than the melodramatic desolation of a kind of waking nightmare. Why had we not been able to continue playing that secret chord over and over again? Well, tolerance, presumably. Not the good form of tolerance, the tolerance we adapt and adopt for another person's shadow and they for ours. But rather the tolerance one develops, alas, towards a drug, in this case the drug of Eros, tolerance and desensitization. Tachyphylaxis is the medical term for it, that rapid decline in the effectiveness of a stimulus. Or as you put it in The Forest of Estrangement, FP, quote, "And thus we died our life, so individually intent on dying it, that we never noticed that we were only one, that we were each an illusion of the other, and that each of us, as a separate self, was nothing on the inside but an echo of that self. Let us give up the illusion of hope, which betrays, of love, which wearies, of life, which surfeits but never satisfies, and even of death, which brings more than we want and less than we hope for. Let us give up, O veiled one, even our tedium, which wears out its own self and dares not to be all the anxiety that it is. Let us not weep, nor hate, nor desire. Let us cover with a sheet of fine linen, O silent soulmate, the dead, stiff profile of our imperfections." As I say, initially I thought I might be wanting to lucid dream in order to travel back into the realm of Hades and find Natalia again. But I realize today that I don't really need to meet that lost love in my dreams, as she has somehow managed, I'm not entirely sure how, to haunt my so-called waking life. So why give her any more time in my imagination? We have had all the conversations that one person in love with another who can only respond, "I cannot care for a person like you," might have, and this is why she is best communicated with through the waking dreams of daily consciousness, as that is where I still feel her absent presence most keenly. I would, however, which is why many of us want to learn this technique of lucid dreaming, I would like to meet someone with a similar sensibility to mine one day and experience again that holy, singular feeling of both enjoying someone else's company but also caring for them in a romantic sense, I guess, and being under the illusion or delusion that they too might care deeply for Max and for me. I would love to have one last great love story before I die, FP, and I think the person I might be able to have this with is waiting for me in my dreams. I just need to apply myself and do whatever it takes to experience lucid dreaming. Waking up at 5 a.m. to meditate for 30 minutes before trying to get back to sleep again? If that's what it takes, why not? Sensory deprivation techniques? Okay. Dream journaling? Absolutely. Sleeping with your book next to my bed every night and calling your spirit into my dreams before closing my eyes each evening? Let's give that a try too.
Not just the technique, maybe it's the will, you know, and by reading a book you really get absorbed into it, and you know it kind of overtakes your will or overtakes your senses. It's not just you sitting down counting, it's this experience of will. I don't know what to call it. So maybe that's helpful in a way, in that it encompasses more of you. Yeah, okay. Toodles.
Lips that once were mine, tender eyes that shine, they will light my way tonight. I'll see you. See you.